When UW professor and researcher Ani Rogers asked African-American boys what other people thought about them, she heard a list of stereotypes. Some positive.
Being a young black male means that you're athletic, that you have rhythm and style, that you're cool.
And many of them negative.
They think we're bad. They think we're aggressive. They think we're cheaters or liars. A lot of emphasis on hypersexuality. They think, you know, black boys just have a lot of babies and leave the moms.
Rogers wanted to know how these stereotypes and ideas about race affect young black men. The kids' responses usually fell into one of three categories: resisting the stereotype, embracing the stereotype, or, most commonly, kids saw themselves as the exception to the stereotype.
A classic example is black boys are stupid. Like, a lot of those black boys are stupid, but I'm not. Right. And so Jair in my paper is the case study. And he exemplifies this very well in describing himself as, you know, articulate and successful and able to navigate conversations on politics. And he has good manners and behaves in a particular way. And he said, you know, there aren't any black males like that. I'm an exception.
And you said that when it came to exceptions, you were surprised that this was seemed to be the leading way to react to stereotypes. Why did that? What did you make of that?
Yeah, it was a bit surprising to me because of the complexity of it, right? So on the surface, to hear a young man say, like, I'm an exception to the stereotype and I can overcome is a really good thing. But then as you listen more closely, you realize what's actually happening is these boys are reinforcing the whole set of stereotypes that they're trying to challenge. And so I think what's troubling about it is so prevalent and you hear it. I'm hearing it in other samples and research that I'm doing. And it's a very common strategy. And I think that we can see it in our own lives, right? When you see people encountering stereotypes, they see themselves an exception to this category. So rather than actually challenging the stereotype itself, they just view themselves as an exception to it. And in a lot of the literature on stereotypes, scholars have shown for a long time, it's really hard to get people to change their ideas about stereotypes. So if you show someone who's a counterexample to a stereotype, they'll often just view them as an exception.
We call that the exception that proves the rule.
Exactly.
If we even talk like that, like this is the exception, you're just cementing the stereotype.
Right. And so what's interesting about the work is that these young men are actually doing that with themselves as well, right? They're positioning themselves as exceptions to the stereotypes, which ultimately makes their task so much harder because now they're on their own. They're individualized. They're separate. They don't have a community or a collective to be a part of. They constantly have to stand themselves apart in order to be successful.
I hadn't thought of it that way. That one effect is isolation. Like, who am I? We all want to be part of something. Mm-hmm. Is that the idea?
Yeah, absolutely.
How does that work?
Belonging, right? Like, that's a driving force of identity, but also just our humanity is like the sense of wanting to belong and connect. And if your group is stigmatized and negative, and your way of contending with that is to separate yourself out, then where do you belong? And how do you connect? And what are the long-term consequences of that, right? What does it look like to say, these stereotypes are problematic for all of us, and how do we collectively deconstruct those?
I want to talk about some possible solutions here. First, I noted that you have studied young men from both the Midwest and Seattle.
Yes.
What differences are you seeing there?
One of the most striking findings so far is the way that kids talk about race here versus in the Midwest and the East Coast where I've done other work. A common idea that I hear here is that race doesn't matter. So there's a lot of downplaying of race.
Why would people in the Seattle area say race doesn't matter?
I think there are a number of reasons, and it's not a, you know, clear geographical study, so I'm not making claims. But it is interesting to think about, right, like what is the narrative within a particular geographical space? And I think within Seattle, where we are very diverse as a city, we have a lot of mixed race. We're one of the top cities, you know, for interracial marriage. We have multiracial families, cross-racial adaptees, a large international population, right, University of Washington. So we have a lot of fluidity across racial and ethnic lines. And so I think that there's a way in which race gets silenced because I have a black daughter and we are a white family. How could we be racist? Right? My best friend is black. How could I be racist? And so there's a way in which, because there are these overlaps, that race gets silenced and this colorblind ideology sort of takes over.
What effect can that have on our race conversation here in the Seattle area?
Well, I think, you know, in some ways the most obvious one is the silence, right? So if we can't articulate or acknowledge racial inequalities, we can't really engage to address them. And in the interviews that I've been doing with kids here, one of the consequences I'm seeing is kids say on one token, race doesn't matter and everyone's the same and I don't think race is important. But then as you talk to them about their friendships and their experiences on the playground and then the lunchroom, they're encountering lots of experiences where race does matter, being excluded on the playground, being told you can't sit at the table because of the color of your skin. And so what do kids do with that sort of contradiction, right? To hear race doesn't matter and we're all the same, but then at the same time experience that race does matter in really profound ways. And so I think we have to push beyond kind of this colorblind or color mute ideology to be able to acknowledge and engage in conversations about inequalities.
Well, let's talk about what we can do about any of this. What do you hope people take away from your research and go out and think and do?
It's always the good question. What do we do with it? And I think one of the first things is just the awareness. So like recognizing that stereotypes really do matter concretely and intimately in terms of how kids start to think about who they are. These aren't just kind of abstract ideas that exist out there in the world, but these are very intimate and experienced in their everyday lives. And so acknowledging that and being aware of that, I think as adults can make us more in tune with how we also respond to the kids in our lives, right? Often it's what we say and what we don't say that reinforces stereotypes. So being aware that these stereotypes are active and prevalent, and then taking a look at ourselves, you know, what kind of stereotypes do I hold? What are the ways I might be reinforcing stereotypes?
What's an example of something you think we need more of in the Seattle area around this?
One thing for sure is conversation. I actually had the opportunity to lead a parent group recently where they were talking about race and kids and how to talk to your kids about race, which I thought was, you know, it's an excellent opportunity for parents because I think a lot of it is parents don't know what to say or they don't know what to do. We don't feel qualified in some ways in how to have these conversations. And in some ways, I'd like to demystify that in saying that it's a conversation. If you are a human being, you're qualified to have a conversation. Be honest with yourself. Take the time to kind of reflect and challenge your own thoughts and ideas and just be honest. Oftentimes, kids in particular are very forthcoming with their ideas. But then when they face resistance, they learn very quickly what's okay to talk about and what's not.
Right.
And so being open, I think, to these kinds of dialogue can make a really big difference.
Ani Rogers is a research assistant professor at the University of Washington's Institute for Learning and Brain Sciences. What stereotypes do you hold? You can find out, you know. Harvard University's developed a famous online test called the Implicit Bias Test. We're tweeting out a link to that right now at KUOW.